Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 19th, is it 20th November 2018, Tuesday class. Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the sadha, the virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja offering. So today we will chant one extra bodhisattva, a store bodhisattva, because the bigger image just arrived. I think Alicia's body is very beautiful. Okay. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Si Pusa. Namo Quan Si Pusa. Namo Quan Si Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milafo. Namo Milafo. Namo Milafo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Tijang Wang Pusa. Namo Tijang Wang Pusa. Namo Tijang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuto Bhagawa. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can visit that. Then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will chant the Vandana onward. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Surameraya Majapamadatana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Ganda Samrapa Dithena ติเทนะธรรมดังเสนะทิโลกาติปังสัมบุตังปูจายามิตโมโนดังกันดาสัมบรายุทเทนะดุเพนะหังสุกังหินะปูจายะปูจานิยังตังปูจาบาจานะมุตตมังวันนากันดาโกนุเพตังเอตังกุสุมาสันตตินปูจายามิโมนินดาสะสิริปาดาสารโรเหปูเจมิบุตังกสุเมนาเนนาปุณเณนามเตนาเชโหทุโมคังปุปังมิลายติยตาอิดังเมกายโยตตายติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตปานิยังปริกาปิตังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาทุโมตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตปาเลปริกาปิตังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาทุโมตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเทโบจานังปริกาปิตังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาทุโมตมัง Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all thisPuja offering, significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma.That cools and doses of the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits.May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body,so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya,be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect Triple Gem. Bedang pujayami Damang pujayami Sanghang pujayami Okay, you can be seated. Then just relax body and mind. You are off the light, and we can have half an hour of formal meditation. Just silent meditation. Just relax, aware, and just maintain the awareness. For those who already know how to meditate, you can just proceed. I think by now most of you should have already developed quite a stability of spiritual faculty. So the moment you relax silent, you can be in the meditative state. So if you need the object of meditation, which can be anapanasati, or you can anchor it to your mind base, your heartbeat area. So you can just stay there if you need it as an anchor. Then relax into it. Just silence everything. Then allow whatever that arise to arise. Initially, if you still have some form of thought process, just let it arise. Then it will quickly slow down and become quiet again. Then after you become quiet, you will be more aware. Then you can detect your own heartbeat or vibration within your heart area. If you are doing anapanasati, the anapanasati will regulate itself. The breathing will regulate itself. Then after that, it will slow down. Then if you have already developed the ability to be silent using anapanasati, then straight away your breath will become very quiet, very still, very subtle. Then you just stay there, until your mind enters sati. Then learn to relax into every mind state that arises. When you relax, the qi flow, so you won't feel any pain or whatever. So you just balance your tripod. If you feel the pressure in front, then you sit a little bit towards the back. Means you lean most of your weight towards your back tripod. If you find the back too painful or starts to develop the pressure, then you lean forward a bit so that you distribute your body weight to all the three tripod points. Then after that, you can just relax, maintain awareness. Then the meditation will develop by itself. Then not long, you will experience piti, spiritual calmness, spiritual rapture, spiritual joy. Then you continue to maintain mindfulness or awareness of your mind base or heartbeat. Initially, it's like pounding very loud. But as you continue to relax into it and silent, the heartbeat like slow down until it become very quiet too. Then you just stay with it. The mind that is already trained, aware, silent, is very sensitive. It can be aware of many things. How you function as a human being, how your mental consciousness comes to be, how your sixth sense operate. Then you will start to witness many of the essential dhamma that the Buddha spoke. Especially paticca-samuppada, or the dwelling, upon contact, what actually happened, because it's not linear. Then how simultaneously you input your content. Then you see how you arise the various type of mental state. So Sometimes it's through your habitual tendency. Sometimes it's through your conditioning. But when you start to see them, you start to understand how you become like that. Then when you start to understand clearly, you will learn how to straighten your view so that you don't have to react that way, so that you can maintain mindfulness, clarity of awareness, to be aware, to understand what is going on. And that is very useful. It's only through awareness you can know yourself, understand yourself. Self-knowledge comes to be. Then as you understand, the essential Dhamma also will manifest. Especially the five mental hindrances, the five spiritual faculties, the enlightenment factors, together with the dependent origination, the 12 links, followed by the Four Noble Truths, the cause of arising of suffering. Then what is stress? What is suffering or stress? The very moment of awareness, when you try to perceive something, if you are sensitive, you will discover the stress within. The very perception, the very feeling, the very moment of sankhara activity, you can feel the fine suffering or stress within. And the cause is always your craving, your desire to arise the thought, to know, to get yourself entangled with all these things. So with stress comes suffering. And the cause of its arising is self-delusion, sakkayadity. The Buddha called it craving. So craving got three types. Sensual craving. This one very common, craving of the senses. Your like and dislike, your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Then all of the other sense door activity. Through attachment, without you knowing it, you attach to the quiet environment, the peaceful environment, the calmness and all those things. So when conditions change, if you cannot adjust, adopt, or develop the understanding to be at peace, then you will be afflicted by your conditioning. So no need to have preference, no need to attach to anything. Whatever the mental state is, whatever the condition is, understand them. Condition like that, things will be like that. Then learn to be at peace with every moment, every activity or mind state that arise. Then when you can be at peace all the time, your mind become different. Your mind develop peace irrespective of whatever the condition is. Then learn to have joy, happiness. Then whatever that arise, just relax into it and silent. Then later on, when your mindfulness stabilizes, it becomes very quiet, very still, and you will experience the silent mind, paucity, tranquility of mind or stillness of mind. This is your true mind. This is your meditative mind. This is the mind that can understand many things. Okay, with this, I will let you meditate on your own. Then I will ring the bell after about maybe the half an hour is up. Thank you. who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then we will chant the invocation to the devas. Then the page 6, invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release. Nibbana, this is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakravalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijacharana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabho Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujupatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyayapatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yamichipatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidang chatari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sango Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakineyo anjali karaniyo Anuttarang punya ketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Pajama. Vedang Pajama. Damang Pajama. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you can visit that. Then before we continue with our the Buddha and his teaching, I think there are two Krishnamurti notes in front of you. We will go through that one first. You all can sit closer over this side if you want to, so that we can interact better. Okay, the first J. Krishnamurti note is finding silent. This is a very important J. Krishnamurti code. This one relates to meditation. Finding silent here means finding your own true silent mind, the silent nature or your true mind. Jai Krishnamurti said, if you have followed this inquiry into what is meditation, this inquiry is very important. A lot of people make the mistake. They just ask the wrong question. They normally ask, teach me how to meditate. So they ask for method, technique to meditate. Or object of meditation with a series of instruction to meditate. But what is important is you must understand what is meditation before you can meditate. So what is meditation is very important. So according to the Buddha, meditation is heedfulness. Without heedfulness, the Buddha said, you are as if dead. So Dhammapada verse 21 is very clear. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas if you have not trained your mind, if you are heedless, heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So spiritually, you don't stand a chance. So to understand heedfulness, we must understand Dhammapada verse 23. The Buddha said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana. So this is what heedfulness is all about. If you can be ever mindful, then use it to meditate, constantly meditate. And meditation, according to the Buddha, is cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path, which is the fourth Noble Truth. Because when you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So to understand what is meditation, we have to understand heedfulness. So heedfulness got two parts. Constantly meditative, ever mindful. Yeah. So first part is, of course, you need to train the mind to be ever mindful. To be ever mindful, you must be mindful first, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. That's why all meditations start with silencing the mind. If you understand what is meditation, if you are not silent, you cannot be mindful. You cannot be aware. Your thought will be active. You'll be heedless. You think a lot. So meditation is basically to train the mind in silent inner awareness, stabilize it, and use it to meditate, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So if you know this is meditation, then it's easy. That's why Jai Krishnamurti said, if you have followed this inquiry into what is meditation, and have understood the whole process of thinking, when you are aware, you have this ability to see your thought, to understand what thinking is all about, how you function as a human being, how your mind actually functions following dependent origination. So the way of thought, the process of thinking is very important. How thought divide, how thought through division via words, concept, ideas, opinion, ideology, etc., create conflict, create misunderstanding, create argument, create selfishness, emotional negativity, fear, etc. Then Krishnamurti said, if you have followed this inquiry into what is meditation and have understood the whole process of thinking, means all of your mental movements or activity or thought process, you will find that the mind is actually completely still. Because when you are aware, there is no thinking. So when you understand that the awareness which is aware is not thinking, that is your true mind. So that true mind is still, completely still, nothing else. Yeah. Then in that total stillness of the mind, there is no watcher, no observer, and therefore no experiencer at all. There is no entity, the I and the me, yeah, who is gathering experience, because that is the activity of the self-centered mind. What is this self-centered mind? Yeah? What is this self-centered mind? Self means egoic, isn't it? Your egoic mind, which is your? You only got two minds. What mind is that? Ah, your mundane mind or your thinking mind, understand? So the egoic mind is your mundane mind, your thinking mind. So that which gather experience, that become the thought. That's why the thought become the thinker, the observer, the experiencer. Mm. And sometimes they use the word the watcher. So all this, they are the activity of the mundane mind, the egoic mind. Then Krishnamurti said, don't say that is samadhi, which is all nonsense. Because a lot of people like to quote the Dhamma without knowing the meaning. He said, because you have only read of it in some book and have not discovered it for yourself. Means sometimes you hear about it or read about it, but you have never experienced it. So you don't know what that thing is. So you just use that word conveniently, samadhi. That is nonsense. There is a vast difference between the word and that thing. The word is not the thing. The word door is not the door. So to meditate is to purge the mundane mind of its self-centered activity. So to meditate is not to allow this mundane mind to create havoc in you. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. Either it's silent with inner awareness to be aware of the reality of the moment, so that you can be aware within the moment. If you are not aware, means you are lost in thought. Your mind is preoccupied with your thinking process, your emotion, your reaction, your mental movement. So when you are lost in thought, you cannot be mindful, you cannot be aware. So it's either or. Either you are aware or you are heedless, lost in thought, thinking. So to meditate is to purge the mind of its self-centered activity. Means when there is no thinking, the true mind arises. That is your meditative mind. That is your awareness within that can be aware of all this movement. Then you start to understand who you are, what you are. Self-knowledge comes from this. How that mundane mind stir and become emotional, angry, unhappy, selfish, deluded, deceitful, then violent. So all those mental states that you create through your mental stirring and reaction to sense experience, they are due to your wrong view, your belief system, your conditioning, your habitual tendency. That's the reason why Krishnamurti always said, acting according to memory is not acting at all. Your memory is all your experiences, good and bad. Your conditioning, your belief system, your fear, your phobia, your insecurity. Everything that you deposit through your experience, you gather there. Then you attach to it, you cling on to it, you hold on to it through your memories. Then you create all the wrong thought to respond to all these memories. That's a thought is respond to memory. So to meditate according to Krishnamurti is to purge the mundane mind of its self activity. And if you have come this far in meditation, you will find that there is silence, a total emptiness. Purge the mundane mind of the self activity means no more thinking, means you enter stillness. That's why he said, if you have gone this far in your meditation, you will find there is silence, a total stillness or emptiness. Yeah? And that one is not a being, not you. No thinking. That's why no watcher, no observer, nothing. He know you, he know me. He's just aware, that nature within. Mm. That's why I say when you meditate, whatever approach you use is the same. You can be mindful straight away because your spiritual faculty is there. There's no mental hindrance. Then straight away you experience this silence, this stillness, this paucity or tranquility of mind. Mm. But if you need an object of meditation to train your mind in sati, to anchor your mind so that you can be mindful of your object of meditation, it's more or less the same. The final conclusion is you use it to train your mind to be aware, then you stabilize it to be ever mindful. That's why until that mind becomes very quiet, very still, when there is no more thinking. That's why you do anapanasati, it's the same. Do until that anapanasati becomes very quiet, very still, no more movement, until everything returns to the original state of stillness, the true mind, the silent mind. So how you approach doesn't matter. Finally, you will reach back the same state, the state of silence within. That's why all of meditation is to push the mundane mind, stop the thinking. But you cannot force it to stop. It has to stop naturally through understanding. Without thought, you are already aware, so you don't have to train to force your mind to be aware. No need. You just understand that without thought, you are already aware. The true mind will surface. So you just relax, silent, let things be. Then all the mundane activity of the mundane mind, they will start to slow down, slow down. We are without craving, without wrong view, you will not stir. You will not do all those funny movements. Mm. So all this is understanding meditation. Mm. So Krishnamurti said, if you have come this far in meditation, you will find that it's silent, a total emptiness. A mind that is uncontaminated by society. It is no longer subject to any influence, to the pressure of any desire. It is completely alone. And being alone, untouched, it is innocent. Because it's just aware, very innocent, no deceitfulness, no craving, no wrong view, nothing. Then, therefore, Krishnamurti said, there is a possibility for that which is the timeless. Timeless means beyond thought, beyond time. Akaliko, the unconditioned, the eternal life to come into being, means you can experience Nibbana. And this is what meditation is all about, finding silence. So when you understand this, you will know how to meditate. Mm. Okay, any question so far? This Krishnamurti code is very beautiful, yeah? Very important. Yeah? You got any question or anything you want to add? Don't have. Okay, then we go on. The next code is, why is one thoughtless? Yeah? Here, thoughtless means heedless. Yeah? You are not mindful at all. You are heedless. So J. Krishnamurti's daily quote on why is one thoughtless is also very beautiful and very important. If you were to listen attentively and check your daily life, especially before you know the Dhamma, before you train your mind, you realize this is what the heedless people are doing. Krishnamurti said the thinker thinks his thought. Who is the thinker? Is there a thinker behind the thought? There is no thinker. Why? Your thought is respond to memory. So thought create the thinking. Understand? Your thought is self-think. There is no division at all. The thought is the thinker. So the thinker thinks his thought. Through what? Through habit. Because your habitual heedless, habitual tendency will arise the habitual thinking, heedlessness, where you didn't train. Your mind is hardly aware. So the same thought pattern will repeat itself. That's why it thinks his thought through habits. Then through repetition. It is like become automatic, mechanical. People say something, you straight away react already. Or when you see something, you repeat the same thing. Because you hardly aware. You hardly make decision. Then through copying. Copying means conditioning. When you are young, when people teach you something, you copy. Understand? So the person who actually train you or teach you or guide you, as a kid, as a child, you tend to copy. Or you see your friend doing this, you copy. So all this brings ignorance and sorrow. It's not habit thoughtlessness. When it's habitual, mechanical, repetitive, you don't even really have the clarity of mind to think clearly because you just repeat them. That is your habitual tendency. That's why he say habit is heedlessness. Habitual tendency is heedlessness. Then the other state of mind, which is awareness. Krishnamurti say awareness create order. Order means what? Order means what? In a society when there is no order, what happens? Everything become what? Chaotic, isn't it? Because there is no order. Chaotic means there is a lot of argument, a lot of fighting, a lot of misunderstanding. There's no order at all, very chaotic. Unless you are aware, he said, you cannot find order. So Krishnamurti said, awareness or mindfulness create order. But it never create habit. You understand? When you are aware, you stop the thinking. You understand? The momentum of that thinking, that craving, the habitual tendency all stop. Through the awareness, there is clarity. Then you act. And when you act with understanding, there is no habit at all. Understand? Where you act according to wisdom, according to understanding, condition like that, things like that, you manifest like that. You are not rigid. You don't always do the same thing. Understand? That's why it doesn't become habit. Because you act with understanding. When you are aware, you can act. When you are not aware, you cannot act. You become like a robot. Understand? Heedless. That's why habitual tendency. You just repeat what you do in life. So subtle tendency only brings about thoughtlessness. Means when you are complacent, when you are very habitual in what you do, subtle tendency only brings about thoughtlessness. Then the question is, why is one thoughtless? Now you listen. This one is very important. Because to think is painful. Later on, when you understand all this, when your mindfulness become very, very sensitive or very stable, you realize every moment of thinking is stress. You know what stress is, isn't it? Suffering, mental suffering. That's why I told you towards the end, before your Monday mind collapse or cessation that time, before you experience Nibbana, you will go through this phase. Every movement of thought process is suffering. Every moment of feeling is suffering. The fine suffering inside there. Every moment of perception arising of the thought is suffering. That's why he say, because to think is painful. Yeah? You will come to that understanding where it create disturbance. Why? There is no more peace within. There is no more tranquility, stillness. There is this activity that is causing disturbance. Yeah? Then it brings opposition, and it may cause one's action to be contrary to the established norm. Means when you interact with society, with the world, then you realize if you think in such a pattern which is not of the society's convention, then it brings about conflict. It brings about opposition. People say you are weird. You are not normal. Understand? Then people say you are wrong. Then you are like not part of society. That's why people find that it's very difficult to have their own thought, to express their own understanding, because society actually penalizes you for doing that, because you don't follow the norm. You are abnormal, they call you. You are not normal. Normal means you accept what society accepts. So that is the reason why he said, Krishnamurti said, it is easier to copy than to develop habitual tendency. Well, this is the way society wants, so you just follow. So when you follow, you got no problem, because you don't enter into unnecessary conflict or opposition. So if your action does not go contrary to established pattern, you will feel like you are being accepted. That's why a lot of people develop this thoughtlessness. Yeah? Because they comply, they conform, then they copy. Yeah? And this become their habitual tendency, the new way, the way they live their life. I don't call it the new way, it's the way they live their life. Then to think and feel extensionally, to become choicelessly aware, may lead to unknown depth. You understand this, isn't it? Yeah? Because if you have clarity of mind, if you use your thought to contemplate, to reflect deep into life, what will happen? Yeah? When you are just choicelessly aware, just aware, without your views, opinion, conditioning coming in, you just understand what is going on, then you realize that all this is delusion. All this is what causing suffering. Then you wake up. Yeah? Because it will lead to unknown depth. Means not from knowledge, not known to the world. That's why a lot of people dare not think, because it leads to unknown depth. Means fear of the unknown. Because they don't know what will happen. That's why some people meditate, suddenly they realize no thought. They thought they are dead. Or the breath becomes so subtle, like they don't breathe. They panic. Then they wake up from the meditation. Fear arises. Because fear of the unknown, they don't understand. When you are silently aware or choicelessly aware, you start to learn things. You start to understand things. You start to see yourself in action. That's why in life, in relationship, you learn. And like that day, at the Pang and Angie's house, Dana, I shared, Lai is your greatest teacher. Because in Lai, you observe life, you observe yourself in action, in relation to society, to environment, to nature, to people, to your loved ones, your neighbor, colleague, friend, and all those things. It is through your relationship you observe and you start to see yourself in action, how you become selfish, how you become aggressive, how you become what they call cunning, or you develop the deceitfulness to cheat, to take advantage of people, then how you react to sense experience and trigger off fear, worry, anxiety. Then when things afflict you, you develop sorrow, lamentation, unhappiness. Then you deludedly grasp onto it, thinking that you are afflicted, miserable, unhappy. So all this is what suffering is all about. So Krishnamurti say very few people dare to develop awareness and clarity of mind to contemplate, reflect, and develop the understanding themselves, so that you can develop the thing that is not known to society or normal people. So I repeat this, to think, feel extensionally, to become choicelessly aware may bring or may lead to unknown depth. And the mind rebels against the unknown. So it moves from the known to the known, from habit to habit. That is the easiest way to live life, to be within your comfort zone. Things that you are familiar within the known, unknown, you're very scared. Then it forms habits and it forms pattern. That's why you start to conform. Such a mind never abandons the known to discover the unknown. That's why this is the mundane mind. This is the thinking mind that cling on to knowledge, that cling on to memories. Memory is of the known. Whatever you experience is the known. Then you put in as memory. You retain them. Then realizing the pain of thought, the thinker become thoughtless through copying. This one we have gone through. Through habit. Being afraid to think, he create patterns of thoughtlessness. This is the worst. Pattern of thoughtlessness, heedlessness. You just conform. Correct. I think like that. You dare not go against people. You dare not go against the popularly accepted norm of society. That as the thinker is afraid, what happened? His actions are born of? Born of what? You all following me or not? We are at the fourth paragraph. Read again. As the thinker is afraid, his actions are born of fear, because you have fear. So when you act out of fear, means what? Your action is born of fear. And then he regrets his action and try to change them. You see the delusion, the fallacy. Doesn't understand what is going on. But this is all thought. The mundane mind creating delusion in your own self. So the thinker is afraid of his own creation. But the deed is the doer. You understand, isn't it? That thing that he does, that's why through memory he act. Then that become the doer. That's why that one have coming. So the action or the deed is the doer. So the thinker is afraid of himself. The thinker is fear itself, because thought, basically is thought.
the thinker is the cause of ignorance or sorrow, because this is the egoic mind, mundane mind. The thinker may divide himself into many categories of thought. Yeah, this one we have gone through at Pang's house, Dana. Yeah? Yeah. I remember Tammy come and ask me, he said, "But Theo, when I'm in the retreat, I can see my thought. Then I can see another thought. Yeah. Another thought, which is a separate thought." I say, this is what Krishnamurti say, divide yourself into many categories of thought. And I said, no. Oh. So when you divide into many categories of thought, but the thought is still the thinker. That's why your egoic mind, your mundane mind never stop. It's just thought, nothing else. You can go and divide, no use. You can divide thought into many categories, yeah? Ideology, philosophy, and all those things. But it's still thought. The thinker and his effort to be, to become, this is Dhamma, effort to be, to become, are the very cause of conflict and confusion. That's like craving to be, craving not to be. So this is the same as the Buddhist teaching. The thinker and his effort to become something, that's like becoming is a craving. It's either sensual craving or craving to be and not to be. Kama tangha, bhava tangha, and vibhava tangha. So this one is very important. The thinker may divide himself into many categories of thought, but the thought is still the thinker. So if you try to solve problem using your thought, using analysis, you cannot solve. But that doesn't lead to wisdom. That leads to what they call cleverness. You become like very clever or very what they call cunning. Because that one is knowledge. When you start to use thought, when you start to analyze, it becomes knowledge. It doesn't lead to wisdom. That's why analysis won't solve your problem. When you analyze using thought, you cannot realize the understanding or wisdom which is beyond thought. You need to silence your mind to be aware, to understand the unknown. So this part is very important. So whatever thought create, you have to be mindful. Thought create through what? Through delusion, through attachment, through craving, through your views and opinion, through your conditioning, your belief system, your tradition. So all this is thought. It can create many forms of thought, category of thought. They use one word, religion. It creates so many religions. That's why thought divine. Then ideology. You got ideology, idea of what the best system of government should be. Should it be democracy or communism? Or socialist society, socialism? Or should it be a capitalist society? So all these are ideology. Then race, again it divides. Nationality, it divides. So thought can create a lot of division. So we call it the delusion created by the mundane mind, the egoic mind. They say all these are self-centered activity. Before you are enlightened, the thought is always egoic because it has self-delusion. It is selfish. It has the evil root of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why it is selfish, emotional, violent, fearful. That's how it has suffering, because the egoic mind cling onto the personality, the existence of an individual. So when you think you exist as a I and a me, separate from others, you become selfish. You want to own things, you want to control things, you want to have things, you want to have authority over things. That is what craving is all about. selfishness is all about, desire, covetousness is all about. Then when you think you exist, when you are not happy, when things don't go your way, when people do something to you, you can get angry, violent, jealousy, everything, negativity of mind state. Then when you cannot understand what is going on, or when your thought project, you develop the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow, the lament, and that is delusion. So the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion come from self-delusion, sakkāya-ditti. And it's all thought-based. That is the egoic mind creating all this. So if you continue to use thought, you can never free. That's why thought-based meditation, whether you use thought to focus, concentrate, develop energy field, or you use thought to analyze, the more you think, the more problem you have. Your thinking will solve your problem. Thinking don't give wisdom. Thinking can give some form of knowledge, understand? And it can teach you how to act in a selfish way, because your thought is egoic before you are enlightened, before the wisdom come in. That's why you have to straighten your view through awareness. When you see through your awareness that this is not right, not in accordance with nature's law, this is what your thought deceive you, condition you into negativity, the evil roots. That's why the evil roots are greed, hatred, and delusion. The Buddha said they are the evil roots that make you evil, root of all evil. So you have to be mindful, aware. And when you are aware and mindful, you can arise a full right effort to deal with them. Yeah, otherwise you cannot straighten your view and purify. So when you straighten your view, you know that this leads to negativity or karma. You have to abandon the evil roots, the wrong thought. Then the wrong speech, wrong action will not arise. So when you have that right effort, based on your understanding, which is right view with regards to law of karma, that's how you can cultivate. You start to develop awareness, to be aware of all these evil roots, then right effort to abandon them through the five ways. The most effective is the third way, the meditative way, and the fourth way, which leads to wisdom. So when that wisdom arises, it will straighten your view further. Yeah. And you become different. After that, you will have this right view, right understanding, wisdom to act. Then you will act according to wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And when you have Noble Eightfold Path, you are incapable of evil. That's how meditation can help you, can help change your life, change you character-wise, personality-wise, transform you into a beautiful being. You will be more wise. You will have right view. You become more noble in the way you understand life. Your character, your personality will transform and make you a better person. And when you act this way through understanding and wisdom and right view, you become beautiful. That's how the teaching actually can bring about a lot of goodness and transformation to the living being. Then you can be a blessing to all. Okay, then we can continue with our text, the Buddha and his teaching. Page 394, I think we stop there. Page 394. Okay, I will read. Maybe we turn back one page, 393, the last paragraph. With respect to this alleged first cause, men have held widely different views. in interpreting the first cause, Paramatma, Brahma, Iwara, Jehovah, God, the Almighty, Allah, Supreme Being, Father in Heaven, Creator, Order of Heaven, Prime Mover, Uncaused, Cause, Divine Essence, Chance, Pakati, Padana, are some significant terms employed by certain religious teacher and philosopher. Hinduism traces the origin of life to a mystical Paramatma, from which emanate all Atmas, or soul, that transmigrate from existence to existence until they are finally reabsorbed into the Paramatma. Paramatma is like their Atman, universal self or ultimate self. One might question whether there is any possibility for this reabsorbed Atmas for a further transmigration. Christianity, admitting the possibility of an ultimate origin, attribute everything to the fiat of an almighty God. Then under the small print, the note, whoever as Soha, how to pronounce this, Soho Penha, says, regards himself as having come out of nothing, must also think that he will again become nothing, for that an eternity has passed before he was, and then a second eternity had begun, through which he will never cease to be. It's a monstrous thought. This one is their comment. Moreover, if birth is the absolute beginning, then death must be the absolute end. And the assumption that man is made out of nothing leads necessarily to the assumption that death is his absolute end. According to theological principle, argues Spencer Lewis, man is created arbitrarily and without his desire, and at the moment of creation is either blessed or unfortunate, noble or deprived. From the first step in the process of his physical creation to the moment of his last breath, regardless of the individual's desire, hope, ambition, struggles, or devoted prayers, such is theological fatalism. So these are the various belief systems that other religion has. The doctrine that all men are sinners, this is Christianity, and have the essential sin of Adam, is a challenge to justice, mercy, love, and omnipotent fairness. Then Hartley say, if we are to assume that anybody has designedly set this wonderful universe going, it is perfectly clear to me that he is no more entirely benevolent and just, in any intelligible sense of the word, than that he is a malevolent and unjust. So these are their expressed views. Then according to Einstein, this one we see what Einstein say. If this being, which they call God, is omnipotent, then every occurrence, including every human action, every human thought, and every human feeling and aspiration, is also his work. How is it possible to think of holding men responsible for their deeds and thought before such an almighty being? So he clearly point out very clear manner that there is no such thing as a God. Almighty theory. You understand? God is a creator. God is responsible for everything. Then, everything you do is God's. God is responsible for this. So if God is responsible, then Einstein say, yeah, if there is such a great being, Almighty, then every occurrences, including every human action, every human thought, and every human feeling and aspiration, is also due to God's work, His work. Then how is it possible to think of holding these people responsible for their deeds and thoughts before such an Almighty being? So he just questioned that. Straight away, you know, that theory of an Almighty God doesn't hold water at all. Because it doesn't make sense. You understand? An easier way to put it is what? Yeah? If God is Almighty, Omniscient, Omnipresent, everything He also can do, then there is no need for the world to be what it is, isn't it? Correct or not? It will be a perfect world, isn't it? Because if you are given God's power, there will be no suffering, isn't it? God is all-loving, isn't it? Almighty. Then He can do what He like, you know. Yeah? If I'm given God's power, I can make utopia on earth and as well. But God Himself is also subject to Nietzsche's law. That's why 911, the Christian God cannot do anything. Larry Livingstone, Larry King, he commented, his faith was shaken. He said, my God supposed to be almighty, supposed to know everything. How can He not know that all? He is the Almighty. How can He not know that the 911 is going to happen? Is it? And how can He, which is Almighty, all-powerful, omniscient, have all this capability, cannot stop such a disaster? Don't tell me He is without love. And there are a lot of Christians who died on that day. So all these things make people think deep, yeah, what actually is the true working of nature. What is the origin of life? What is life? Who are you? What are you? How do you function? That's why of all the teaching you go through one by one, finally you will come to realize what the Buddha had actually awakened to or realized. It's pretty amazing, pretty wonderful and beautiful. It can explain the way things are, every aspect of life, not only this life, every life. And He doesn't need a soul theory, understand that? He doesn't need an almighty being. The idea of an almighty being. And there are many philosophers. One of them is this, the greatest religious critic. He is a very famous author. What is his name already? The title of his book is "Why Am I Not a Christian?" Why I am not a Christian? What is his name already? He got a very, very unusual name. I cannot remember all of a sudden. That guy, you know what he said or not? Those who believe in God is due to the poverty of their mind. He's a Russian. What is his name? Bertrand Russell. Yeah, Bertrand Russell. Very good. Thanks. Why I'm not a Christian. You read that book. It's very interesting, Bertrand Russell. He said, those who have to cling on to the concept or idea of an almighty God, they do it because of the poverty of their mind. Because their mind is very weak. And just like some of these Westerners, I like this lady who spoke in one of the talks. She became a Buddhist nun later on. What was her name already? She came to Brickfield and gave a talk before.
I think it's an American lady. He became a Tibetan nun. What was her name? He wrote the book, The Monkey Maya. What was her name? She, in the early 80s and 90s, she used to come around Malaysia too. Okay, never mind. Anyway, I was there doing my recording in Brickfield. Then many of these Buddhists there, they were very excited when she came. Then during the Q&A, they asked her, he said, "We understand that you are a Christian. Why did you become a Buddhist nun?" They asked her this, no? She laughed. She laughed. Atuptam Chodram. The nun is Tuptam Chodram, I think the Christian, the Tibetan name, I think. She answered in a very nice way, in a very humorous way. He said, "I'm a science student." He said, "I came from a Christian family." He said, "When I was young, I go to church," he said. "And the pastor and the churches keep on like drumming into her that there is this Almighty God, that is omnipresent, that is Almighty, that created this world." Then he said, "Everything is God's creation." Then as he grew up, she said, she starts to think deep into life. Then through her scientific understanding, she realized something is wrong with her own religion. No? She said, "How can it be? It's just like what I told you just now. Is it? If God is almighty, if I'm given God's power, the world will not be what it is. Is that with so much war, people born defect, so much cruelty, so much disaster, so much havoc and problem of the world. Famine everywhere, nature's disaster, war, conflict. And even among the human race, so much division, so much problem, so much suffering." Then she said, "If I'm given God's power, I can create a better world. I can create a better world than God," he said. So he said, he refused to accept that religion. That's why he went out to search for herself. Then she ended up embracing Buddhism, the Dhamma. Because he said, Buddhism is the only religion that doesn't need a God to explain the way things are. And Buddhism have a very, very fantastic, unique teaching that can make her feel comfortable with the science that she has learned. It like fit into everything. Even when the Buddha described, when people ask him about the star system and all those things, the way he replied 2,000 years ago, is it? "There were more stars in the heaven than there was sand on the Ganges." At that time, he already knew. So all this makes it very, very interesting for humanity as you read through all their thought. Some of these are very beautiful. Then she make another joke, I remember. This joke was very interesting. He said, finally, after going deep into all this, he realized it was not God that created man. It was man that created God. You know how she came to the conclusion. Because he said, man who don't understand, don't know how to explain the way the world is, understand? And they don't know how to explain science, everything. So they put in this Almighty to solve all their problems, thinking that with one Almighty God, everything resolved.
That's why they got Genesis and all this. They say, where God says things, let there be light, and there is light. Day and night is not due to God. We know it's the rotation of the axis on our planet Earth. Everything is naturally moving. The heavenly object has its signs and everything. So he say it's actually the other way around. It's due to the, like Bertrand Russell say, due to the poverty of the mind, they created God. But the reality is actually man created God. It's not the other way around. He say it's not God created man. Then he add in another joke, which was very interesting. You remember last time we see this dinosaur show, eh? Dinosaur. What is the title of the show? Jurassic Park. He said in that show, there was a scene where this dinosaur were attacking them. Then there is this journalist and a few of these people who were there. So they were all frightened, attacked by this dinosaur. No? Then one of them is very scientific. No? Yeah. He hold on to his Christian religion. He said, God created man. Then this guy, his partner, his friend, he say, wrong. God created dinosaur. Where dinosaur come first? He said, then God destroyed dinosaur. Then God created man. Then man now, they all want to create dinosaur because they want to salvage the dinosaur egg and all those things. Then suddenly, one of them say, dinosaur destroyed man. No? You know what happened? When dinosaur destroyed man, how? That lady shouted, no, woman rule the world. He wants to tell you how the mundane mind create all this illusion. Because you keep on talking about God created man, then he said wrong. He said God created dinosaur. Then dinosaur destroyed man. Then this lady say, woman rule the world. We are no more mad. So all this is an expression of their views, their philosophy and all those things. But as Buddhists, we should be very grateful for what we have through the Buddha's understanding. The Buddha's enlightenment, that's why it's very unique. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. That's why he understands the nature's law that governs life. And you can understand clearly what life is, the origin of life, the secret of life. Then you know how to live life in accordance. So all this ideology or thought given by thinkers or philosophers, if you examine them, none of them really fit in. Where I have gone through, so far, the most complete and the most, I should say, more or less perfect fit is still the Buddhist teaching. Very, very precise. Okay, we go on. Page 395. So Einstein one, we finish. In giving out punishment and reward, he would, to a certain extent, by be passing judgment on himself. How can this be combined with the goodness and righteousness ascribed to him? So this is about God. Then according to Charles Bradlaugh, the existence of evil is a terrible stumbling block to the thesis. You know what is a thesis, isn't it? A person who believes in God. Atheist means you don't believe in God. So the existence of evil is a terrible stumbling block to those who believe in God. Understand or not? But if God is almighty, there shouldn't be any evil around, isn't it? Correct or not? If you're almighty, you can make a perfect world, isn't it? Or we call it utopia. Pain, misery, crime, poverty, confronts the evocator, the advocate of eternal goodness, and challenges with unanswered potency his declaration of deity as all good, all wise, and all powerful. This refers to the Almighty God. Commenting on human suffering and God, Professor J.B.S. Hayden writes, either suffering is needed to perfect human character, or God is not almighty. Well, this one really hit them hard. Those who believe in God, when they read this, they sure not happier. Because this professor said, either suffering is needed to perfect human character, or God is not almighty. So if God is not almighty, then what is God? What is God? God is just an ordinary being. Then there is nothing special there. That is the weakness of that theory of an almighty God. Well, when you probe deeper, he will tell you, you cannot probe further. Why? Because God is almighty, beyond reason, beyond question. You cannot question God. God has a reason for everything. And then they will stop all your questions. Because in the early years, when my classmate and me went around and inquired about all these things, we also finally met one Christian group. And the way we questioned them using our scientific knowledge, they also finally give up. And they tell us the same thing. God is almighty. You cannot question God. God has a reason for everything. Well, they told me there is an almighty God that create. Then I say, who create God? And they look at me, you know. What you mean by who create God? He said God is a creator. Then I asked, before God create, what was he doing? Then, as a science student, law of conservation of mass and energy, nothing can be created out of... You need something to create something, isn't it? Then that thing that create also needs something to create, isn't it? So if you say God create, then my question is, who created God? Well, nothing can exist by itself. Because that is the creation theory, understand? You need somebody to create. So who is the creator of that first cause? That's why they can't answer. And they just stop you by saying, God is almighty, beyond questioning. So God has a reason for everything. Then we also didn't want to probe. Then we said, never mind, if that's the case, we will continue to search, continue to explore, inquire. That's why finally, when I received that book, What Buddhists Believe by K. Sridharmananda, then I saw the Four Noble Truths. Then straight away inside, my nature tell me, no need to search, this is the one. Nobody can do that unless he is the real one. So that's how I ended my search. That was the year 1973, I think. I started in 71 when I was form 5. I start after the exam holiday period. A group of us, I think six of us, five or six of us, we went around. We went to all the religion, even our teacher and all those things. Our chemistry teacher that time, Hua Yong, was a pastor. He's a very nice guy. We actually talked to him and he tried to explain many things, but cannot. So then we went around. Okay, I continue. The former theory is disproved by the fact that some people who had suffered very little but have been fortunate in their ancestry and education have very fine character. The objection to the second is that It is only in connection with the universe as a whole that there is an intellectual gap to be filled by the possibility of a postulation of a deity or God. And a creator could presumably create whatever he or it wanted. Then next page. Yeah. In despair, a poet of his old age, Lord Tennyson, thus boldly attacks God, who, as recorded in Isaac, says, "I make peace and create evil." Then he say, "What? I should call on the infinite love that I have served. Sorry, that has served us so well. Infinite cruelty, rather, that make everlasting hell, make us for new, us for doom us, and thus what he will with his own. Better our death, brute mum, mother, who never has heard us groan." No, I also cannot understand what his poem mean. Who can understand? Huh? Please help to explain. This style of English not easy. I cannot understand what he say. Yeah. Never mind. Huh? We just keep it. Dogmatic writer of old, authoritatively. Dogmatic writers of old, what? Authoritatively declared that God created man after his own image. Some modern thinkers state, on the contrary, that man created God after his own image. With the growth of civilization, man's conception of God grows more and more refined. There is at present a tendency to substitute this personal God by an impersonal God. Voltaire states that God is the noblest creation of man. Actually, there is a lot of people with different ideology or thought. They have their own thoughts. It is, however, impossible to conceive of such an omnipotent, omnipresent being, an epitome of everything that is good, either in or outside the universe. Modern science endeavors to tackle the problem with its limited systematized knowledge. According to the scientific standpoint, we are the direct product of the sperm and ovum cells produced or provided by our parent. But science does not give a satisfactory explanation with regards to the development of the mind, which is infinitely more important than the machinery of a man's material body. Scientists were exerting... Wow, what is this word? Omni vivum ex vivo. All life from life. Maintain that mind and life evolve from the lifeless. Now, from the scientific standpoint, we are absolutely parent-born. Thus, our lives are necessarily preceded by those of our parents and so on. In this way, life is preceded by life until one goes back to the first protoplasm or colloid. As regards the origin of this first protoplasm or colloid, however, scientists plead ignorant. What is the attitude of Buddhism with regards to the origin of life? Here, maybe you listen, you will have a better understanding. This is the Buddhist understanding of the origin of life. At the outset, it should be stated that the Buddha does not attempt to solve all the ethical and philosophical problems that perplex mankind. Nor does he deal with speculations and theories that tend neither to edification nor to enlightenment. Nor does he demand blind faith from his adherents, and not a first cause. Yeah. First cause means a creator. Huh? He is chiefly concerned with one practical and specific problem, that of suffering, and is here he put destruction. Actually, it's not destruction. Huh? Suffering and the end of suffering. All side issues are completely ignored. On one occasion, a bhikkhu named Malu Kaputa, not content to lead the holy life and achieve his emancipation by degrees, approached the Buddha and impatiently demand an immediate solution of some speculative problem, with the threat of discarding the ropes if no satisfactory answer was given. "Lord," he said, "these theories have not been elucidated, have been set aside and rejected by the Blessed One. Whether the world is eternal or not eternal, whether the world is finite or infinite, if the Blessed One will elucidate this answer to me, then I will lead the holy life under him. If he will not, then I will abandon the precepts and return to the lay life. If the Blessed One knows that the world is eternal, let the Blessed One elucidate to me that the world is eternal. If the Blessed One knows that the world is not eternal, let the Blessed One elucidate that the world is not eternal. In that case, certainly, for one who does not know and lacks the insight, the only upright thing is to say, 'I do not know. I have not the insight.'" Calmly, the Buddha questioned the erring bhikkhu whether his adoption of the holy life was in any way conditional upon the solution of such problem. "Nay, Lord," the bhikkhu replied. The Buddha then admonished him not to waste time and energy over ideal speculation detrimental to his moral progress, and said, "Whoever Malukaputta should say, 'I will not lead the holy life under the Blessed One until the Blessed One elucidate this question to me,' that person would die before this question have ever been elucidated by the accomplished one. It is as if a person were pierced by an arrow thickly smeared with poison, and his friend and relative were to procure a surgeon, and then he were to say, 'I will not have this arrow taken out until I know the detail of the person by whom I was wounded, nature of the arrow with which I was pierced, etc.' That person would die before this would ever be known by him." So this is the analogy. What the Buddha meant is all those questions are not important because it's not relevant or not conducive for enlightenment. So don't waste time on all those things. It's not the handful of leaf, what the Buddha is trying to tell them. In exactly the same way, whoever should say, "I will not lead the holy life under the Blessed One until he illuminate to me whether the world is eternal or not eternal, whether the world is finite or not finite," that person would die before the question has ever been illuminated by the accomplished one. If it be the belief that the world is eternal, would there be the observance of the holy life? In such a case, no. If it were the belief that the world is not eternal, would there be the observance of the holy life? In that case, also no. But whether the belief be that the world is eternal or that it is not eternal, there is birth, there is old age, there is death, the extinction of which in this life itself I make known. So this is about the reality of birth and death, how to transcend birth and death. "Maluka Putta, I have not revealed whether the world is eternal or non-eternal, whether the world is finite or infinite. Why have I not eluded, not revealed this? Because these are not profitable, do not concern the basis of holiness, and are not conducive to aversion, to passionlessness, to cessation, to tranquility, to intuitive wisdom, to enlightenment, or to the realization of Nibbana. Therefore, I have not revealed them. That's why it's not part of the handful of leaf. According to Buddhism, we are born from the matrix of action, karma yoni. Parents merely provide us with a material layer. Therefore, beings precedes being. At the moment of conception, it is karma that conditions the initial consciousness that vitalizes the fetus. It is this inevitable karmic energy or karmic force generated from the past birth that produce mental phenomena and the phenomena of life in an already extant physical phenomena to complete the trio that constitute man. Dealing with the concept of beings, the Buddha states, where three are found in combination, there a gem of life is planted. If mother and father come together, but it is not the mother's fertility period, and the being to be born is not present, then no germ of life is planted. If mother and father come together, and it is the mother's fertility period, but the being to be born is not present, then again no germ of life is planted. If mother and father come together, and it is the mother's fertility period, and the being to be born is present, then by the conjunction of the three, a germ of life is there planted. So this is the Buddhist concept, the three conditions for conception to take place. Here, Gandhaba does not mean a class of devas said to preside over the process of conception, but refers to a suitable being ready to be born in that particular womb. This term is used only in this particular connection and must not be mistaken for a permanent soul. For a being to be born here, somewhere a being must die. The birth of a being, which strictly means the arising of the aggregate, kandanang patubhavo, or psycho-physical phenomena in this present life, correspond to the death of a being in a past life. Just as in conventional term, the rising of the sun in one place means the setting of the sun in another place. This enigmatic statement may be better understood by imagining life as a wave and not as a straight line. Birth and death are only two phases of the same process. Birth precedes death, and death, on the other hand, precedes birth. This constant succession of birth and death connection with each individual life flux constitute what is technically known as samsara, recurrent wandering. Okay, we stop here. Page 401. Then we continue on what is the origin of life. Maybe next week. Maybe I just read to you. The Buddha positively declared, this is the Buddha stand, without cognizable beginning is this samsara. The earliest point of being who, obstructed by ignorance and fettered by craving, wander and fare on, is not to be conceived. So this one is a famous expression by the Buddha. The other way to phrase it is better. Last time I used to read the other one. The Buddha used the word inconceivable is the beginning of time, since the first thought of ignorance that condition birth and death for living being. So he used the word inconceivable is the beginning. Means it's very difficult to understand, because too long you cannot conceive unless you are a Samasambuddha. but no use. Understand also no use, because no meaning. It doesn't help you at all. Okay, so we end here. Oh, almost 10:30. Oh, another 2 paragraphs we finish. Okay, then I myself finish it. Under the note, anatago yang bikawi samso. Down there, inconceivable is the beginning. The word should be inconceivable. He said incalculable is the beginning, brother, of this faring on. The earliest point is not revealed, of the running on, the faring of beings clothed in ignorance, tied to craving. This one is in the Kindle saying. The next one is it. Inconceivable is the beginning of the samsara. Oh, we finished the chapter. Okay. Next page. Page 402. Inconceivable is the beginning of this samsara, not to be discovered, a first beginning of beings who, obstructed by ignorance and ensnared by craving, are hurrying and hastening through this round of rebirth. So this one is by this author, Jnana Tiloka Thera. So the other one is samsara means recurring wandering. Samsara is the unbroken succession of aggregate element and the sense basis. Okay, so the life stream flow an infinitum as long as it is fed with the muddy water of ignorance and craving. When these two are completely cut off, then only does the life stream cease to flow. Rebirth ends, as in the case of the Buddha and Arahant, a first beginning of this life stream cannot be determined as a stage cannot be perceived when this life force was not fraught with ignorance and craving. It should be understood that the Buddha has here referred merely to the beginning of the life stream of living being. It is left to the scientists to speculate on the origin and the evolution of the universe. Okay, so we end. So we finish chapter 22. We have chapter 23 next Tuesday. You can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So the Buddha on the so-called creator God. I call your Brahma one unjust among who make a world in which to shelter wrong. Okay, we will continue next Tuesday. Okay, we end. Do you have any question? If you have, maybe next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, remind me before we start chapter 23 to go through one more time on the Buddhist understanding of the first course and also the Buddhist concept of life, origin of life, and what is life all about, and how it explain perfectly the way things are. Everything that can be understood is a complete explanation of what you see in real life. So all the other system or belief system or religious belief, you look at them, it cannot answer a lot of questions. Like when I was young, I can't. I look at all the various religions and look, cannot, as a science student, I can't. But they cannot explain most of the things that I see. The first thing about the first cause of creation is when I look around me, ever since I was born, nothing is created.
everything come about normally. You understand? You understand? Did you observe anything being created in your life since birth until now? Everything that you see come from nature, isn't it? Come from a natural process, isn't it? There is no creator to create, isn't it? I have never seen a human being be created. They are all born. you cannot use magic pop, come out. So, even the whole house as a civil engineer, our infrastructure, our building, our airport, the car, our whatever automobile, transport system, everything, they come about through an orderly nature's laws, creation. It's not somebody created it out. It comes through a very systematic way following nature's law. Yeah. That's how I look at it. Nothing is created. And I come to develop my own understanding through what I observe, what I see, what I understand. And when I develop the ability to meditate, I understand how this form of mind actually work. That's why it all conform very well to what the Buddha has taught. Yeah. The consciousness part, the two aspects of mind, the nature within all. I can actually go in through the meditative experience and understanding, then I can confirm almost perfect mesh everything that the Buddha mentioned. There is such thing as the end of all suffering. There is such thing as the unconditioned Nibbana, the cessation of form and mind. There is such a thing as enlightenment and all those things, which other teachings don't have. They use the word enlightened, but they don't know what that thing is. They cannot describe what that thing is. And most of them, you have to wait till after death. And like the Christian, they promise you the kingdom of God after you die. Eternal heaven if you believe. You don't believe, eternal hell. So that makes it very difficult for me to understand and accept. Because to me, it's very simple. You can be a sinful person who did all the nonsense in life. Last minute, believe in God, accept God, eternal heaven. No such logic. Then you can have a very, very pious person, very religious person, very kind, never kill, keep the precept, everything, have a lot of love, compassion, do a lot of goodness. Just because he doesn't believe in your religion, in God, after he die, he's condemned to eternal hell. To me, it doesn't sound right. And life is not like that, not so simple. It doesn't need much common sense to understand that there is no such thing. That's why a lot of things doesn't mesh, doesn't fall into place. Yeah. That's why to investigate, to find out, it's not difficult. Yeah. About truth, about life. You just have to put it to test. It will stand up to investigation. Actually, nothing can deceive you if you really have the mindfulness and the awareness to go and investigate into all this. So that's the reason why finally my nature still go back to the Buddhist teaching. And not that I praise the Buddha, no. It's because his teaching is really so unique, so wonderful, so complete, so beautiful. Yeah. And if you really understand it, meditate into it, awaken to it, then you will understand what I mean, or what the Buddha has been sharing and teaching all this while. Okay, we will do the sharing of merit, transfer merit, then we end. Akasata ca bhavata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva cirang rakanti lokasasana. Itta vata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan
Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones, then we end.